Well, I have a little bit after six, so why don't we get going? And I will welcome everyone again to tonight's PPS Success Mentor teleclass. I'm sure many of you recognize my voice by now, but for those of you joining us for the first time, my name is James Phelps, and in addition to being your host for tonight's call, I'm the PPS Success Educational Coordinator. And tonight we're really fortunate to have with us once again PPS Success Mentor Chris Timpert, who will be talking to us about embracing the past. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Chris, she is trained with Paul Check and is both a Check Level 4 and Holistic Lifestyle Coach Level 3, as well as a PPS Success Mastery Practitioner. As an accomplished holistic coach and fitness professional, Chris guides her clients through their challenges in order to facilitate passage into freedom and happiness. I should say I really thoroughly enjoyed my last teleclass with Chris because it really hit on some fundamental issues, making choices, and why many of us arrive at a place where we feel kind of helpless or as though we don't have any choices in our lives at all. I have a suspicion that tonight's class will really dovetail very nicely with the previous classes, our past and our perception of the past shape how we perceive the present. So I'm excited because I think this is going to be another really powerful and engaging teleclass. Now, one final thing before we begin, I just want to remind everybody that we do record these calls. So if you happen to be in a high traffic area or you're on a cell phone that might pick up some echo effects or something like that, I recommend that you mute your line until you have a question or you want to jump in by pressing *6. And then if you want to join in the conversation, you can unmute your phone at any time by pressing any button on your phone pad. So with that stuff out of the way, welcome, Chris. It's great to have you with us.
Wow, that's quite an introduction. Thank you so much, James. I just want to let everybody know what an honor it is to be on these calls, and pleased to know that, you know, I'm doing the exact same thing as everybody out there. I'm growing and learning just like everybody else. And what I really enjoy about these calls is I just get an opportunity to share a little bit about how I experience things. And, you know, I have a different opinion than other people, and I've experienced, you know, different ways of finding self than other people. And really all of this is an offering. You know, I'm not a professional at anything. I'm just, you know, doing the hard work like everyone else, just trying to find that wholeness in self. So, yeah, this topic for me, embracing the past, is, for me anyway, in my life, was the key that opened up the master lock. It brought me the most amazing healing, and I want to just talk about a couple of things. I would really like to invite anybody out there. You know, I'm going to talk a little bit, and I actually have a story to share. I love to use analogies. I love to tell stories to bring understanding. But, you know, when I'm finished with that, I would really love the opportunity to talk with people that are out there. You know, it's so hard to be intimate, and being intimate with each other is like the biggest hurdle in growing. You know, you want to get on the call and say something, but that ego part says, no, don't say anything, that'll sound stupid, or I don't want to get, whatever it is. So I can only invite all of you to try to not listen to the noise in your head, and if you want to participate, and if you have a question about anything, you know, not that I'll have an answer, but it'll certainly, it'll develop communication and conversation, and it also helps me have an opportunity to grow more when I get to actually interact with the people I'm talking to. It's hard to just talk out there to space when, you know, I don't even know who's present. So anyway, the great thing about embracing the past, as you all are currently aware, life is pretty much, a constant self-management. And we come to these places and these programs because we have such a hard time managing our own lives. You know, we're just, no matter what we do, we're empty or we're unhappy. And we try so hard to fill ourselves up with relationships, attachments, different things. You know, we just don't know how to go about it. And like anything, you know, in life, you know, you walk into a jewelry store and, you know, there's a part of you that thinks, well, gee, if that guy would just turn his back for a second, I could just take this, this, that, and this. But you don't, of course, because that's not how we behave, and you get in trouble for those things. So you have to manage your need to steal and manage your need to tell the police officer that he's a jerk for pulling you over. And we need to do the same thing with our emotions. We really need to learn to manage them. And, you know, it's kind of like, as long as we're in a body in this experience, you know, we kind of do the same thing for our body. You know, we get hot, we get cold, we get hungry. We always have to do things for that. And as long as we're in existence, we actually have to experience duality, good and bad, happy and sad. You know, these things are all natural, and it's a part of life. What we want to try to avoid, though, is living in the extremes of that, where we're either really happy or we're really miserable. So to become more aware of ourselves, the past is where all these wonderful presents are from our childhood that we've forgotten to open. And, you know, Eckhart Tolle is a very popular person for me. I love his books. He's highly intelligent, and I know he talks a lot about the power of now and how we need to stay present. And, you know, that's fine, and that's a great place to be. But what I've discovered in myself, it's very hard to be present when you don't feel you're good enough, or everything you're doing is wrong, or people don't like you, or you're always saying the wrong things. And, you know, so you're constantly being pulled back in your wounding and your identity. And as much as you try to stay present, you just simply can't stay there very long at all. So, like I said, the past it's just such a great opportunity to go back, to get to know ourselves better, which is really all we can do here, is get to know ourselves. We'll never know anyone else. How the best way to do that is for me anyway, is by gauging our emotions. So what I can invite all of you to consider is, you know, the next time somebody hurts your feelings, next time somebody makes you angry or disappoints you, or you feel perhaps they've abandoned you, that's really a wonderful opportunity to take a giant spotlight, the kind that they open malls with, and shine it back into your past, even if it's just yesterday. Shine it back as far as you can, and try to identify with when you felt like that another time. And, you know, it is hard at first, because you won't remember a lot of your childhood in the beginning. But, you know, you look back, and you try not to attach to what you're feeling. So if you look back at an experience that was particularly hurtful, try not to attach to it when you get emotion. Just watch it, and just become aware of it. And if you can be consciously aware of that in that moment of what it felt like, that's like a healing. And the more you do it, the more you practice it, you get further back, further back, further back to maybe when you were a little kid. And, you know, I tell you, it's amazing. I've been in so many workshops, and I've watched so many people literally strip themselves down emotionally. And the wounds are sometimes just, you know, you almost can't even understand them. I've seen people where, you know, their father died when they were 2 years old, and they've been walking around their whole life feeling that they were abandoned, they weren't good enough, and it was just simply because their father passed away. And, of course, you can imagine the father probably didn't want to pass away, but that's how a two-year-old experienced it. So going back into your past, it's not like looking for things that people did wrong. It's just simply looking for maybe how you experienced a situation or a certain time in your life. And when you can become aware of those things and then bring it back into the present moment, it's a lot easier to be present, because then you can, when you're with somebody the next time and they hurt your feelings or you feel as though you're abandoned, you could say, well, now I know why that bothers me. It bothers me because, you know, my dad died when I was 2 years old, and I really felt like he abandoned me, so I don't need to react here. I just recognize that's just a part of who I am now, but I'm just going to watch it. But it's easy words. You can't really do that right away, because initially you react because you get angry that you get abandoned all over again, even though that's not even what it's about. You know, my one mentor, John McMullen, always says that you're never angry about what you think you're angry about. So it's a process, and it's a practice. But emotions are a great gauge to how you're doing and how you're feeling. And they're wonderful opportunities to go back and discover yourself in that method. And for me, anyway, this is how it works. And, you know, the other part of this, it's very scary to even imagine doing such things, because there's a part of you that is so familiar with the identity that you have, the pain that you're experiencing, whatever that is for you. And change is really very difficult. It's so funny, though. The ego loves to stay in familiarity. You know, it likes to stay, you know, if you had a, you know, whatever kind of relationship you had you know, with a parent when you were young, you find yourself older in a similar relationship, and, you know, maybe you're not happy in that, but you stay in it just because it's familiar. But whatever is familiar for us, you know, we typically don't like. This is why we want to grow and expand ourselves to get out of it. So it's kind of funny that we have that, it's like an irony in a sense. You know, we're stuck in the familiarity that we want to get out of. But a great example that I'd like to use is the baby. When the baby is in the womb, it's the child is growing in this wonderful, warm environment, and he doesn't need anything, you know, he doesn't even need to breathe. He has food, and, you know, he's just floating around, having a great time, doesn't need a job, doesn't care what people think. And, you know, honest to God, if the kid had a choice, he would probably forgo being born. But the divine steps in and says, it's time for you to leave this place. Can you just imagine the fear, you know, getting pushed out of this, all you've ever known, this comfortable, warm, cozy, familiar place, into bright lights and, you know, loud noises, a smack on the bottom, wrapped in a blanket, and, you know, the only thing that feels relatively good is the vibration of the person that they put you in the arms of. But that's dramatic change. But that is where life is. And what you're doing with PPS and what I'm doing in my own life, growing myself, it's a different kind of a change. It's more like a psychological change, almost actually more like a psychological death in a sense, because we were born perfectly wonderful in consciousness, and we developed all these different things that we learned about society and from our parents, and now we're in this process to find self. And what's so darn scary about it is that to do it, you have to start little at a time peeling off all your identity labels that were stuck on you from when you were a little baby, and it's very painful. And it's very hard to walk away from your family, in a sense, because it's what you have to do to find self. And I think that's what makes the experience a place where we just tend to just stay stuck, in a sense, rather than doing it. That sense of loyalty to our family, and I'm hoping that I'm making sense today. I don't want to ramble too much, but I know one thing for a fact, that this awareness and this work, it doesn't, you know, you just do it. You just be intimate with yourself, become consciously aware of your emotions and your reactions, of your need to prove and defend, and it gets easier. It gets better. You start to know yourself. You get to a place where if somebody insults you, you don't react anymore. You can just let that person be who they are. And that, honest to God, that's really what love is letting everybody be who they are, it doesn't interfere with your existence. You just simply are grounded in yourself. Anyway, this brings me to a place where I wanted to share a story with everyone. And after I share this story, I want to continue talking about some things. So, and then I'd love to open up if anybody wants to talk or ask questions. And if not, I'm sure I'll just find something to talk about. But anyway, I have this story that I want to share, and it's just a story. It's not real. It's just imagination. And it's a way that I like to communicate. So anyway, I want to tell you about a place that existed a long time ago, a very beautiful, beautiful planet. And the people that lived on this planet were absolutely pure consciousness, all of them, every single person. And there were people in power, and there were people that worked, and there were people that raised children, and everybody just worked together. Everybody was just as important as the other. And through their consciousness, they found intelligent ways to find power and to provide travel and food for everybody, and it was just the most beautiful place ever. And anyway, these aliens stumbled upon this place, and they fell in love with the planet. They thought, boy, this place is just beautiful. We'd love to take over this planet and make it ours, but they were little people, and they really didn't have a lot of force, so they didn't want to take these people on because they were very conscious, and they knew they couldn't defeat them. So what they did is they had an evil plan, and they thought they created this virus. And so what their plan was is that they were going to inflict this virus into the minds of these people. And rather than the aliens killing them, they would just simply sit back and watch these people kill themselves. So what they did is they put one came down and they put everybody to sleep, and they implanted this virus into their heads. And the virus was very intelligent, a very complex virus. And what it did to these people is it totally shrouded their consciousness. It blinded them from who they were, and it left them with a feeling that they weren't enough, that they were empty. There was something missing. And as it swept through the community and to all the people, everything that they had built quickly started to fall apart as people started to compete and started to manipulate and started to become angry and jealous. And instead of being a whole, they all began to separate and to gather in little groups. And, you know, it was something that in time just progressively got worse and worse. And then the next generation was born, and the next generation. And the interesting thing that occurred at a few generations in was there was a baby born that had been immune to the virus, and it came into existence pure consciousness. And the people didn't really know what to do with this child. They had no idea what it was. And, you know, they became very interested. And then once as the child grew, they became very threatened. And then in other parts of the planet, the same thing happened. A baby would become conscious. And people didn't understand. And some of these babies were murdered. And some people built statues for these babies. And other people built a whole community around the baby, and then they started to draw lines in the sand, and then they would start fighting about whose baby was more important than the other baby. And actually it got pretty ugly in this place. And the aliens, you know, they kind of watched this whole thing, you know, hoping, when is it going to end so we can take this place over? But what they didn't bank on is they didn't expect the people to actually, in the process of destroying themselves, that they actually were destroying the planet. So all the while that this was all going on down there, now they were polluting, and the water was dirty, and everything was just falling apart. And eventually the aliens just went off and gave up on that particular place and went somewhere else to find a home. But the story pretty much leaves these people kind of on their own at this point now, once a vital, thriving, wonderful, conscious community is now fighting, angry, at war, and hating each other all the while, killing their beautiful planet that they lived on. And happily, there were conscious people that learned in time to keep their consciousness a little bit more on the down low, and they didn't let people know about it so they could understand the virus a little bit better. And this virus was pretty intense because it had a survival mode like AIDS has. AIDS has the AIDS virus goes into a cell as a DNA, and so it goes into the cell and says, "Hi, I'm DNA." And so then it mutates the cell and turns it into AIDS. And people that don't take their medication, of course, the virus mutates the next day, and if they miss one, that's the end of that. So this virus, this mind virus the aliens had, was really intelligent, and it had a couple default modes in case anybody started to evolve and grow out of their feeling of emptiness. And the conscious people that were on the planet that were keeping quiet watched this, and they learned how to get around it, in a sense. And they learned that the virus had no space for truth. So whenever they would speak truth to another person, just a little bit of information would go in and would help. That person would begin to heal themselves through that. And the three major things that I have to share in this story, it was very interesting on this particular planet anyway, the three major default systems of this virus is that when a person who was empty wanted to find themselves, the virus would kick in with attachment. So that would cause the person to attach to a person, a thing, a house, an identity, or whatever it was. And that usually would bring them back into that place of being empty again, of being where they weren't enough. But there were some people that were still stronger than that, and they could grow past that place. So the virus had a second default mechanism in order to keep them stuck, and that was by using the words, I know. So the virus would cause the person to constantly repeat, I know, anytime they had an opportunity to grow self. And that would allow the person to stay stuck, because, of course, once the person would say, I know, then the brain would say, well, gee, we don't need to learn that because we already know it, and it stopped the process. But the most interesting thing about this virus is some people were actually able to grow past that as well. But it had, like, this major last wall of defense kind of thing for those, the really conscious ones, the ones that were really powerful back in their day, or their genes from the powerful ones, the people that ruled the planet. They could break through all these barriers, but the last one was the most intense, because the last part of the virus that would prevent you from growing was one that would let you identify with your growing. And so you would walk around saying, well, I'm growing self, and I'm becoming conscious, and that would become your identity, and that would pull you right back into that place of being empty and stuck. So anyway, I really don't know how whatever happened to those people on that planet, and I realize we have our own problems here on Earth with all our other stuff, but I like that story because it's kind of interesting, and it really does kind of parallel a little bit what's happening here on our planet, especially when we do go back into our past. And it's interesting for me anyway. What held me back from going into my past was, again, you know, you really don't like to say that mom and dad did anything that was bad, and, you know, sometimes it could be as simple as mom worked all the time and she was never home, and so you felt like you didn't have a mother, and you might have been really angry about that, but you don't want to voice it because it feels like, gee, then you're saying your mom was a bad person, and I love my mom, I don't want to do that. So I guess why the story is important for me is, if you get to a place where you can recognize that, you know, your parents simply are just parenting you the way they were parented, and their parents parented them the way they were parented, and it kind of just keeps going back and back and back and back. So when you're born and your parents teach you how to eat your food and tie your shoes and button your shirt and all different things, you know, these important things, they're also teaching you the other things, you know. So if they're not whole in themselves, then they're teaching you that. Unconsciously, of course, they don't do it. They don't do it to hurt you. They genuinely raise you and love you with all their heart, and everything that they have to give you, they give you in the only way that they know how, because of their loyalty to their parents. So it's just, you know, I use this story just to kind of where you don't have to feel guilty about going back. It's like those people on that other planet, you know, they had a virus in their head. I mean, it's like they were behaving in a way that they really couldn't help it. So it's like if a retarded child, hurts somebody, you can't really be angry with that child, you know, because he's retarded. So, it's okay to go back and to experience the way you experienced whatever. You know, it doesn't have to be anybody else's fault. It's just how you experienced yourself in that moment and whatever. And for me anyway, this brought such a powerful awareness to myself. And I had some very interesting experiences as a child, you know, one of my worst wounds, and I'm happy to be intimate and share. You know, my mom always told me that I would never amount to anything and that I was going to be a failure. And, you know, even today, you know, there are lots of things happening in my life where, you know, I see that and I sit with it and I say, wow, look at that. I'm not good enough. I'm going to be a failure. And anyway, I just use it as a tool. Do you ever heal from it? In my opinion, no. I should say, does it ever go away? You know, I don't believe it really ever does. I think that you're always going to feel the parts of you. You're always going to feel the parts of you that aren't good enough, or whatever your wounds are, and I don't know what they are. It's just the awareness is so powerful. Just to be able to sit in that moment and to be aware of the emotion and say, you know, yes, I'm very familiar with that, and I'm aware that I'm thinking that right now. And then just allow it to be there, and then just continue moving forward and being present in the moment. And for me anyway, embracing the past is just is such a great way to learn how to be present. Because right now, you know, all we're doing is we just drag the past around. You know, it's like a corpse. I mean, you might as well just, you know, turn around and look at the damn thing. You know, it's either that or we're just imagining that, well, okay, we're dragging the past around and things are just so, like, not what I want right now, but it'll be better when I'm here, or it'll be better when this happens, or when my kids are grown, or when I have money, or whatever the heck it is. You know, these two places are the extremes of our experience here on Earth. And we can't make that part of the experience go away. All we can do is use our awareness to get to the center of the game board. And I use this in my last call, the analogy of the Monopoly board. You know, when you're on the outside of that board, you spin a lot more than you do when you're at the center. And there's nothing to land on but good things and bad things. That's just what it's about. So the goal is to stay grounded in self and to be intimate, you know, to be intimate enough with yourself where you can actually express things. And, you know, again, in a lot of these workshops that I've been in and the experiences that I've had with Paul, I mean, it's amazing to watch how hard it is for people to take this defense mechanism that we build around us, this disassociation in a sense, you know, that, whatever, who cares, you know. It's so hard, and it takes so much courage to let those walls down, to expose yourself, to say, yeah, you know, I'm a this, I'm a that, I'm hurt here, I'm hurt there. But what you get from it is just, it's amazing. The growth is, you know, it's beyond words, how you get to know yourself. And, you know, courage and strength is not somebody, you know, who can be stoic and have no emotion and to be totally emotionally unavailable and to act like they're in complete control of their life. That's not what strength is. I mean, that's really just stupidity. It's just somebody loving the misery of their experience, and they have the right to do that as well. But if you don't want to be in that place and you want to grow and you want to learn to love yourself and to just be grounded and at least happy in where you are, you have to allow yourself to be naked and to just share your feelings, whatever they are, even though the ego part is telling you, you know, oh my God, never do that. So anyway, I mean, I hope I didn't lose everyone out there in the story. Usually I love feedback. That's why I like human beings in front of me, but on the phone it's hard for me. But anyway, I just want to say that, in my opinion and of my own experience, the more that you can be aware, the awareness is like a bridge, and that bridge leads to consciousness. And once you can get to that place, then, you know, meditation is a beautiful, absolutely beautiful tool. But once your awareness is sharp and you're good at being there and you're good at witnessing, your life, in a sense, begins to become a meditation. You just get to this place of, you know, whatever comes, comes. You know, you have to, you know, I've heard people ask me, well, why do bad things happen to good people? And I always say, well, why do good people get sunburned? You know, why do they get hungry? It's just, this is just the process in life. You know, there's going to be good, there's going to be bad. And the consciousness that you will receive from your hard work at becoming aware of yourself will ground you in such a place that it won't matter what comes. You're going to know who you are in that moment, and you're going to learn to enjoy the miserable times, and you're going to enjoy the fun times, because life is, after all, both. You can't escape the duality of existence. You have to have misery in order to have happiness. They just go hand in hand. Anyway, I'm just curious at this point if there's anybody that would like to say anything, or if they have a question or a comment. I'll leave it open for a few seconds if there's anyone brave enough.
Hi, Chris?
Yes?
Hi. I was privy to you explaining a little bit of this to me a few days ago, and I was wondering if you could elaborate a little bit. When you told me the story, you explained how it was easier. You have to make yourself aware that you can't turn around and then help others be aware also, that it's just kind of an individual experience.
Yeah, I'm really glad that. Thank you so much for that, Natalie. That's absolutely right. It's like as soon as we get to a place, and this is perfectly normal and natural, you know, when you find your place where you're not suffering as much anymore, you want so much to share that with other people. I mean, it's a natural thing. But, you know, it also becomes a part of the ego needing to jump in and try to save other people, too. So, this is another wonderful opportunity to become aware of yourself. But because you can't, you know, just imagine, like, well, I love that story, the analogy of the other planet. You know, imagine trying to go up to somebody with a mind virus and say, hey, you know what, you've got a mind virus in your head, and you just don't know, you know, what's going on. You're just sound asleep. I'm awake. Look at me. I got it going on. Well, you know, people don't want to hear that. And in fact, you know, you could get yourself killed doing that. It's really important that grow in yourself, be grounded in yourself, and you will vibrate to such a degree. You can be next to somebody who's sound asleep, and they're going to know that you're awake. So what you do then is you wait. You wait for people to come and ask you, why, hey, I see, you know, man, you always seem so happy, or you're so grounded or whatever, you know, what is it? And that's when you share. But it is hard now. You know, it's hard to get to that place where you're just like a little kid. You're just like, this is so funny. Life is so funny. We don't have to suffer. This is all just ridiculous. And you start laughing. And you just want to share it with everybody. But, you know, and I'll even borrow an expression an analogy that Paul Check uses about how if you go into a hotel room to stay overnight and, you know, you arrive late, it's 1 o'clock in the morning, and you know, you can sleep until 10 o'clock, but the guy that was in there before you had whatever, a flight to catch or whatever, so he had the alarm set for like 4 in the morning. And, you know, you fall asleep and that alarm goes off and, you know, you pick that alarm clock up and you're pretty pissed. You know, you either shut it off, slam it down, throw it against the wall. So, as Lao Tzu says, you know, the master allows people to stay confused if they choose to. And they also will help another find their way out of confusion should they choose to ask. So I hope that answers.
It does. It's just so natural to want to, you know, share what you learn. It's just, it's almost a fight within yourself because you do want that ego. You do want that satisfaction of, hey, somebody helped me. I want to help somebody else too.
Yeah. And you know, that's a great opportunity then to grab the big spotlight, the mall spotlight, and shine it back there and say, God, what is it? Why does it feel so good to save another? Why does it feel so good to, to take that kind of responsibility on? You know, I mean, there's really, you know, that's a whole other thing in itself. I mean, you know, because we can't be, and I say this, the best way I can, we can't be so arrogant to think that we know what's better for somebody else. You know, we just simply can't, because we, you know, not for nothing, I mean, the God, divine, the source, whatever you want to call it, there's sure a lot going on in this planet. You know, there's a lot of people, there's a lot of experiences, there's a lot of situations. I mean, it's nuts. It's amazing how it can keep track, or whatever it is, God keeps track of every person and everything, and it's all perfect. But yeah, we never know what another person is going through. And another great point, Natalie, I have to make is that, you know, whatever anybody tells you, whatever you hear from me, whatever you read, whatever, it doesn't matter. Whoever gives you words of wisdom, if that's what it is, they don't mean anything. And it doesn't mean a darn thing until you experience it yourself. So to see another person suffering, most of the time, the reason why we want to jump in there and help is because we're suffering watching them suffer. So we really just want to stop our own suffering. That's what it becomes. So we save them. And when we save them, then we're validated. See, now we're whole now. We have purpose. we matter. We did something good. Because we couldn't save our parents. We tried to change them, and we couldn't. So that's why we go out and we try to save and help other people as well. It's cool. But the interesting thing is that person that's suffering, if you take away their suffering and you try to jump in and save them and make their life easier for them, you rob them of their wisdom. You rob them of what they're going to use the rest of their life to navigate, to learn from themselves. So their suffering is purposeful, and suffering is necessary for us to discover our own guru inside us and this awareness and this consciousness and all these things that I'm talking about tonight. It's really just to basically, unfold ourselves to the little inner being in there, that beautiful bright light that is inside us. And if you meditate long enough, that light will shine from the inside. And that's the light that takes you through this experience. That's the only thing you need to listen to. That's all there is. And when you can find that place in yourself through your own suffering, then you don't need anybody to tell you what to do or how to do it or whatever. So, I mean, see, your question brought out something I probably wouldn't even discuss tonight. And so I completely honor your willingness to participate and to be intimate. That was really powerful.
Well, thank you. You answered it really well.
Well, I appreciate that. Do you have any other questions? Anyone else have any questions? They're so fun because they open up stuff. But.
Chris?
Yes.
I wonder if you might talk about how we might go about really developing that awareness, because I know that, part of the kind of sneakiness about the way our past and all of those things manifest is they're not even really conscious. They're kind of like a reflex, right? Those judgments, those things that can really cause our hurts and cause hurts in other people are very reflexive, and so sometimes they... they slip right by you and without even noticing. So how do you build that? And sometimes for me, like, it's not until days go by and I might think, oh my God, I can't believe I did that, and then something will kind of trigger a whole exploration. But maybe I'm just talking about my own experience. I mean, is it your experience that sometimes it can be sort of like a reflex? And how do we get kind of better about being aware when that reflex is happening?
Well, that's a great question, Jane. Very intelligent question. And, yeah, you are talking about yourself. And that's about the only thing you can ever talk about is yourself.
That's right, yeah.
But, all I can offer you is my own opinion and my own experience. And you know what? You're welcome to the human race. I mean, yeah. This is exactly what I said before. We're in a body. You can't say, darn it, why am I always hungry? Why do I have to cough up phlegm when I'm sick? Why do I have to exercise? Because you have a body. Because that's just what it is. You're in a body, and the body needs things. Now, you have to learn and grow to a place where you don't identify with your body, but you have to take care of it. It's what drives you through, this lifetime. So what you're saying is very intelligent. How do you get to a place where you stop reacting? Well, I don't know. I guess at this time in my life, it still happens. I mean, you just, all that happens, James, is the more you're aware, you get to a place where, maybe it takes a few seconds, and you catch your thoughts. But do you still react? Yeah. I mean, my kids are like my greatest teachers. Can they set me off? Oh, my God. They can set me off in a heartbeat where I'm not watching anymore. I'm totally reacting. Yo, kids, this and that. So, being human beings and being in this experience, and like I said before, life is fast. The game board is fast. I mean, we're a Monopoly board, but it's not just the guy on the horse, the iron, and the car. We got, like, billions of pieces on the board. There's so much stuff going on. I mean, when you start being present in the moment, the most fascinating thing is just waiting for what's coming next. that, honest to God, out of all the awareness and consciousness you grow into, for me, that's the most exciting thing, is knowing that in the next moment, I don't know what's coming. It might be a good thing. It might be a surprise. It might be a bad thing. It might be nothing. And I'm sitting here waiting for the present moment to unfold, and it's nothing. You know, and, but, you know, I'm still in that process myself. And again, I think it's a lot of it has to do with being in the experience that we are. We have to participate with whatever the universe has in store for us, the people we're supposed to meet, the interactions we're supposed to have. But, you know, anything that we work hard enough on, we literally become a master of that art. So life isn't about, it's not like, you know, really, for me, all enlightenment means is being able to move through life grounded. But it doesn't mean that you don't experience, you know, highs and lows. It's just that you don't experience them to the extremes. And will you react? Yeah, you probably will, but you might not react to the point where you're out of control. You know, you're going to feel it and recognize it, and you're going to catch yourself a lot faster every time. So if you're somebody that, you know, you tend to get angry and, like, totally snap and lose your temper to the point where you're going to pick up a chair and break it over somebody's head, you'll get to a point where you'll pick up the chair, but you won't break it over their head. And the next time, maybe you'll grab the chair. You know, it's just a process. And we all, being that we're all unique, beautiful pieces of art that are, none of us are like anyone else. We are all absolutely masterpieces in our own uniqueness. So we unfold at different times. So it's not like you're doing anything wrong, or I don't know that we can even do it better. It's just that your own experience, your own process, your own growth, and, you know, you just, the more you do like anything else, the more you work a muscle, the better it gets. The more you work at awareness, you know, the better it gets. But you, what I have to say as well, which you also brought up, which is very important, you know, there are people out there that will say, when I, you know, when I talk like this, is, you know what, my life is, I had a great childhood, my parents were perfect, and I really didn't have any trouble. So we have to all understand that there's a part of us that we're just unaware of. There's parts of us that maybe we're not ready to embrace different wounds and different experiences, and that's okay. But if you have an experience like that where you don't believe that there's anything, then, you know, that would put you in a place of you know, happiness. And if that were the case, you know, you wouldn't be on this call. So it takes time. And so every time we go back, and like I said, emotions are a great way to do it. In experiences, in relationships, you know, you're out with your friend and your friend says something and you get jealous. You just need to watch that. And you need to go back and say, God, when did I feel that way? What am I jealous of? You know, why do I feel she's better than I am? And it's just simply that awareness that helps, just helps you understand yourself. And really, when you start to understand yourself, you start seeing yourself and everyone else. You know, in my opinion, and I've been to a lot of workshops, I've watched, like I said, a lot of people strip themselves down completely emotionally naked. And the bottom line is that everybody just wants to be loved. That's it. We just want to be valuable. We want to matter. And we walk through our whole lives needing that from other people or needing that from whatever. You know, like somebody else has the responsibility to make us happy. And what an amazing thing to put on anybody. You know, when we're really the only ones that can do it. And many times it just goes back to mom and dad, you know, they weren't there for me. And you know what, I just wasn't good enough for them, or they fought all the time and they got divorced and, you know, this and that, and I didn't matter and all this stuff. And it's all about love. It's just about needing and wanting love. And everybody out there in the world right now, fighting and yelling and disassociating and competing and seducing and manipulating, it's all the same thing. Everybody just needs to be loved for who they are, for what they look like, for how well they do things. They just want to be accepted and validated. And when you can do that for yourself, you know, when you can be a puzzle without a hole that you're waiting for somebody to fill, then you move through life very differently. You see in people their reactions, their behaviors. You just see grown-up people, you know, or I should say little children in grown-up people clothes, looking for love. It's all it is. So we grow in ourselves, and like Natalie said before, you want so much to heal another, but we do that only to validate ourselves and say, hey, that's that virus that the other people had on the other planet, the one about self-growth. You attach to being somebody that's growing. You say, hey, you know what, let me show you how smart I am. Let me show you how conscious I am. Let me show you how much I've learned, you know, and you get stuck there. So now it's arrogance, you know, but we either get taught how to be arrogant or how to be pathetic is how we get our needs met. And that's okay. But, you know, the bottom line is it's just love here. So when we can be love for ourselves, we can see the neediness in other people, and we can allow them to simply be who they are. And in just that allowing, I mean, even somebody that would normally drive you absolutely nuts with their negativity or constant complaining, or even if they're just somebody that is constantly stuck in a situation they shouldn't be in and they won't change because they're constantly saying, I know, I know, I know. You just love them. It's all you have to do. And it's amazing how powerful that is. People start to grow because your vibration then rises. And, you know, it's just the most, there's nothing else here that I want to do. And you know, have I figured it all out? No. I certainly haven't, but I've gotten myself to a place by going back, and for me anyway, like I said, the most powerful thing on the planet for me was, you know, instead of dragging my past around, I actually stopped, sat down, and started opening up all these gifts from my past that I thought were horrible experiences and, you know, and put them to use. And you know, I realize now that a lot of the bad things, a lot of the beatings I took as a kid, you know, because of the attention I didn't get, those things pretty much saved me. So, you know, you turn stuff around. And you know, you say, wow, well, I learned now how I'm not going to parent my children and how grateful I am for you for teaching me that. You run into somebody that is a jerk and you can say, thank you. Now I see how not to be. So, you know, this whole process is just, this is why we're here. It's the journey. We don't want to arrive tomorrow, you know. We got some time here. So as long as you're here, you want to have your, you know, enjoy waking up. Enjoy remembering. Because we were all born here, complete consciousness. I mean, that's all a baby is purity. There's nothing in there. We're the ones that bring out the price gun like they have at ShopRite for the disgusting can of peas, and we start tacking labels on the little baby, telling him he's this, he's that, da-da-da-da-da, you're from here, this is what your family believes in. You're Republican, put a Bush Cheney sticker on him, whatever, you know. And you grow up with that, you know. It's really kind of funny. Anyway, I don't know if I answered your question or not. I'm getting myself rambling.
No, that was great. Thank you.
I appreciate that. But as we're winding down to the last 10 minutes, is there, you know, I'd love, like I said, darn questions, great. They open up such a wonderful opportunity for further dialogue and things like that. But
can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I have a question for you. Do you think that there are people that have problems and unhappiness that are not related to the way they were raised or the parenting that they got? Do you believe that everything that we are is a product of our childhood experience? Because that's what I'm hearing.
That's a great question, and I appreciate you asking it. And again, as I said in the beginning of the call, I can only offer my opinion and my own experiences in my own life. What's true for me may not be true for you. But, you know, in so many of the people that I've been with and watched grow, and yeah, it really comes down to the very thing, and it comes from childhood. And again, it's not like parents do anything wrong to children. I think it's just the wonderful opportunity that allows us to expand and grow, because, you know, human beings are imperfect. Animals are perfect. The dog is perfect. He's born perfect. He's a dog his whole life. He's just perfect. But we're not. And, you know, finding self is what the experience is all about. It's a chance to expand and to grow and to learn who we are. I would have to say that, yeah, I don't believe that you can be, wounded later on in life. I think, and it's not, again, it's not that anybody does anything on purpose to hurt you. It's how we experience something as a child. And to help make that point a little better, like when I use the two-year-old analogy, you know, when you're 2 and 3 and 4 years old and your parents behave a certain way, that child views it very differently than you would today. So that's the stuff that you bring into your adulthood. So mom and dad may have done absolutely nothing, but maybe as a four-year-old, you know, maybe mom didn't have time for you. She was busy making dinner, and one day you really needed a hug. You know, maybe somebody made fun of a picture you drew at school, and whatever, you came home crying, you wanted mom. And she really just was in a place where she just didn't have time. And something as absolutely innocent as that, can become something you carry and you suppress. And you bring that with you as you grow up. And this is just my opinion from my own experiences. And this is the stuff that we look back into our past to see how silly at times a lot of the stuff is. Sometimes it's not. Some people go through some very traumatic things as children. But when you say, you know, if you're unhappy in a situation, if you're unhappy in anything, whether it's your job, whether it's a relationship, whether, you know, where you live or whatever it is, that's something that you need to sit with and try to look back and say, gosh, what is so familiar about this situation? And it is very difficult to be vulnerable with yourself. That's what's so nice about being with another person, because, usually it's easier to see yourself in other people, if that makes sense. I don't know whether I've answered your question or not.
Well, I mean, yeah, I thank you. I don't know if there's a complete answer, but I appreciate your response.
Well, thank you. And again, it's just my opinion. Any time we have any kind of wounds or pain, you know, you may even find a wound from 5 years ago. And this is where you start. That's all it is. Like I said, when you look back into your past, look back into yesterday. You know, you don't have to try to look back to when you were 1 year old. It's just a process. And you know what? You might find it. Maybe you find it at 30. Maybe you find it wherever you find it. It's just awareness. And if you can become aware of what it is in your life that you're not happy with, just be aware of it. And again, the more you do that, the awareness does grow. And, you know, we're all here because we just want to try to be happier with ourselves. You know, we don't want that empty feeling that we carry around is, you know, so, it's such a heavy weight. You get to a point, you know, there's that great movie that's out, that Pixar movie Up. It's a great movie to go see about the past, because it's such a heavy message for Pixar to see this old guy who always wants to go have an adventure, and something always comes up, and, eventually the wife dies, and they don't get to have the adventure that he wants, so instead of going in the old folks' home, he puts all these balloons on his house and inflates the house, and, you know, at one point in the movie, the balloons don't hold the house up anymore, so he literally straps it to his body like it's a Macy's Day Parade balloon, and you watch him suffer in this movie carrying around this house, which represents, of course, the past. So if there's anything at all right now in your present moment that's causing you pain, it means that something yesterday happened that is making it today. So maybe it wasn't when you were a little kid for you, but it's back there somewhere. So I can just invite you to sit with that and try to find that place and love yourself in the process.
Thank you.
So it's a pleasure, absolute pleasure. So I had fun tonight. What, 9:50? I stayed awake, James.
Oops, I managed to mute myself and couldn't undo it. I certainly stayed awake, too, and I know that plenty of our audience did, too. That was fantastic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I had a really good time. I guess that the time pretty much concludes my call.
The one final, because, you know, I could ask you questions all night, but... just one final question that I had for you was that did you have any special exercises or anything that you did that kind of you thought, maybe like journaling? Or I know we do some mandala exercises in lesson one and lesson two. Are there things like that that you might suggest people try out? You know, I know different people resonate to different exercises as well. You know, I know that I've talked to a number of practitioners who love the mandala exercises and a number of practitioners who find them really very challenging. Is there something you might suggest people try in the way of, you know, either journaling or artwork or something like that that help you and that might help other people with their ongoing journey to develop their consciousness?
I've used everything. I have literally I'm like a storehouse of self real, you know, all these books and different great people and mandalas and I just submitted my thesis proposal to Paul on how mandalas help us heal. What I usually like say if I meet somebody out on the street and they ask me what's the best reference, you know, I really love Eckhart Tolle's book Finding Your Life's Purpose, because it talks a lot about those wounded parts. If it's hard for someone to find awareness, I mean, if you really have a hard time doing that with yourself. Really, the main thing that got me to a place of just being more mindful was, you know, I had mentors. I worked with Paul for a long time. You know, I worked with JP in my early growth, and then I worked with John McMullen. And, you know, I needed people that were in a place where I could, where I could reach to say, can you please help me find this place? You can do it through, reading like Osho is probably some of the best stuff out there, in my opinion. His books are just very easy reads. They're highly intelligent, and it's just so much truth that you, when you read them, the ego just lays down and says, you know, I can't argue with this. So, this is why mentoring, you know, it's a wise person that reaches for help. People that just say they know and, well, I'm just going to stay in the familiar because it's easy. Well, whatever, then that's serving for you. Then stay there. But then be happy. Be happy in what you choose for yourself. But you reach for, you find friends, network. Find somebody that's working on themselves too and have interaction. It's, you know, James, it's, when people get together in a group, for me anyway, and everybody strips down emotionally naked, and they all share where their pains are, and they cry and they cry, and they can all sit there and be present in a moment of silence. For me, that's like Christ consciousness, you know? It's like, you know, how Christ said, when two or more are together, I'll be there. And I understand, for me anyway, that's what I believe he meant. Because you can't reflect by yourself. You can't grow alone. You need another person. You need another mirror to look in to see yourself and expose yourself. And you need other people to grow. And it takes a lot of it takes a lot of courage to reach out and ask for help. But, you know, we're all on this ladder of life, in a sense. And those of us that are higher on the ladder are happy to reach down to help another get up to that height. And those of us that are high on the ladder reach up to those that are higher and ask them to pull us up. And it's this beautiful opportunity to come together as human beings and allow everybody to be who they are and to just offer to provide a place for another person so they can just be that and they can grow themselves. Because just being in pain, like I said before, it's really not, it's not a bad thing. It's not a good thing. But it's just what it is. And it's a part of the experience here. And pain and suffering are purposeful. And I've said it before, the people that don't finish lesson two, to the degree that you're stuck and the longer it takes you to find yourself only means how high you're going to ascend when you do it. Because, you know, as you descend, as you, you know, as low as you go, you have to go up. So when you hit bottom and you stay there a long time, you know, you're probably going to shoot past the moon when you start growing. So it isn't a bad thing to be stuck. It can be very serving. And no doubt you need to be there or you wouldn't be there. And I do believe in that, you know.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for taking this late evening time out to talk with us tonight. I really appreciate that.
It was such a pleasure. I'm just absolutely honored to have the opportunity to share my own opinions and my own experiences. And you know what? Even if it makes somebody think a little different, that's awesome, and whichever. It's just fun to share. So I really very much appreciate everybody who called in to be present with me. And I really had a lot of fun. And if you know, anybody has any questions or that they, you know, my email is on the site if anybody wanted to email me or anything. Anyway, I'm always available if anybody needs me. So
I'm sorry to interrupt.
No. I was just going to say I'm talking again in September. So
yes, well, and I was going to say in many ways this call ended on a very appropriate note in some ways because we were talking about reaching out to help and I wanted to take the last few moments of the call to remind everybody that, of course, Chris herself is a mentor, a PPS mentor, and all of her information about access and so forth is available on our site, ppssuccess.com, under the PPS Mentoring Services section. You can find her entry there, and I'm sure that I know that she would be a wonderful mentor. So I would highly encourage anybody who feels as though they would like some help and a kind ear to listen to on this journey that they visit our site and look Chris up.
That sounds great.
Yes. Well, thanks everybody for joining us. And our quarter three schedule for our PPS Mentor teleclasses will be posted very quickly, and I'll be sending around an email to everybody to let them know when that schedule is up and when they can come and sign up for our next round of classes. And I have every confidence that they'll be just as exciting and engaging as this one was.
Awesome. I had a really great time. Thank you so much.
Thanks again, Chris, and thanks everybody for joining us. Good night.
Bye.
Take care. Good night.
Good night.